Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to Pro Wrestling Flashback. I am Sinbad, and of course I am joined, as always, by Couture. How are you doing, Couture?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Not too bad. I was actually off work today, so I had plenty of time to prepare for this. And I was tonight we're doing a show about one of my favorite factions in history, the Dangerous Alliance. And I'm talking about the WCW version of the Dangerous Alliance. I'm aware there's an ECW version and an AWA version, but the real one. Yeah, the prime players in the WCW version of the Dangerous Alliance were just incredible. It was just great. And it's just one of those things with like factions in wrestling that some of them just don't work and some of them do work. And this was just such a team that gelled together so well. So we're going to go, like, we're going to start with the beginning of it and how it all, you know, how they all got together and how it all formed and where they all came from, like, before then, you know, in WCW. So it kind of made sense that they were all together. So there's a lot to it of how it ended up working out. I mean, it was pretty short-lived, but it was just great for as long as it lasted.
Yeah, it was at a time when WCW needed something like that because they were just coming off of, you know, they lost Ric Flair. And
they did.
Things were pretty bad at that point. And they just needed that one group, you know, kind of like, maybe not as successful, but kind of like when the NWO hit in the mid-90s, you know, kind of gave the group a big jolt of excitement at the time.
The good thing about the Dangerous Alliance was, like, the NWO eventually went stale and eventually added a bunch of members and, you know, added, you know, like, Buck Bagwell. When you get
20 members in there, it's just too much.
Yes, Mike Rotundo. I love Mike Rotundo, but he doesn't belong in the NWO.
Yeah.
So, And NWO tried rebuilding itself a bunch of times, and that never really happened with the Dangerous Alliance. It was just such a great core group of great wrestlers. I mean, all of them were.
Whenever you get a faction that's over five members, it's a little bit too much, I think.
Yes. So, all right. So it's 1991, November of 91, and WCW at that point, to me, was starting to get good. Lex Luger was firmly in his role as the heel champion because he had turned, you know, previously from a face to a heel, went with Harley Race and Mr. Hughes. So he was the heel champion, and he was finally starting to get over as a heel. And so when you have a strong heel on top, like, that's the way wrestling is. I mean, the difference between the WWF and WCW was, you know, WWF always had the babyface as champion, and WCW always had the heel as champion. So
I always referred like the heel champions, you know,
it just worked better. So what was happening with that, you know, WCW was finally getting comfortable with itself because Ric Flair leaving really was a huge dent, and Jim Herd was an idiot. Jim Herd was the person that was in charge of the company. He knew nothing about wrestling, and he tried making all these changes, and it just didn't work. We all know it didn't work because Ric Flair left for a reason. I mean, he loved working for WCW, or the NWA at the time. He liked it, and he chose to leave because Jim Herd, you know, essentially forced him out and, you know, just made a really, really bad mistake. So, you know, our last show, we talked about that Halloween Havoc, and we talked about that Clash of the Champions. So if you haven't listened to that yet, you know, download that show from last week. It's a good show. We go, you know, into a lot of detail about, like, kind of the lead-up to this. And at that Clash of the Champions, a tag team of Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko, who had been teaming for a while, they had lost the WCW tag team titles to Dustin Rhodes, and it was supposed to be Barry Windham as Dustin Rhodes' partner, but he was hurt, and it was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. So they lost the tag titles to those guys. And so, you know, they're two heels that just lost their tag titles, and, you know, they kind of, you know, could be floundering, you know, because they're not the champs anymore. So that's kind of, to me, that was kind of their way of getting into the Dangerous Alliance of, you know, they're available, they're there, and they're two great wrestlers.
Yeah, it gives them, it's a good reason to, yeah, for them to go in there, because, you know, and their mind, and probably rightfully so, they got screwed, you know, because they had a mystery guy come in at the last minute, so it made sense for them to go with the Dangerous Alliance.
And the thing with the Dangerous Alliance that made it work was every guy that went in there could use a manager.
Yeah.
And a good heel, even if they could talk, they can always have a manager, you know, talk for them or interfere or, you know, I've always liked the heel manager because, you know, matches only have that, and matches only have a certain amount of outcomes that they could have. So when you add a manager to the equation, that gives you more outcomes that you could possibly have. I mean, there's just, you know, adding another person that just makes, you know, more possibilities. It's just,
and you had all these guys that were all at their best when they had managers.
Yes. So, all right. So we had that Clash of the Champions in November of 1981. And there was already a member of the Dangerous Alliance. Well, it was Ravishing Rick Rude, Halloween Havoc. It was him and Medusa.
Yeah.
So those were essentially the first two people in the Dangerous Alliance. Medusa was a valet. Rick Rude was obviously a wrestler. And he's now the United States champion at this point because he had just beaten Sting.
And they really did not have any, like, other heel below Luger at that level at that time. I mean,
no.
The only other one I could think of was, but he was still young coming up, was the next one, next biggest heel was maybe Steve Austin or somebody like that. Or, well, maybe Cactus Jack, but he's not really, like, one of the guys I would think, like, a Rick Rude or somebody, you know?
There's a difference of the type of heel, because Cactus Jack was more of, like, a brawler. Like, to me, I never looked at Cactus Jack as, like, a good heel at the time, because he wasn't conniving. He wasn't, like...
He was a mercenary.
Yes, exactly. He wasn't doing things... You know, he wasn't there to cheat. He was there, you know, to wrestle, you know, the baby faces, and, you know, he would do whatever it took to win. But, I mean, he wasn't necessarily, like, trying to be underhanded about it. He was just, I don't know, it's just a different style of character.
And he just wasn't at the level at that point where you could see him, like, next in line, you know, like as the U.S. title championship, like, heel at the time.
Exactly. So, Wasn't it just called World Championship Wrestling at the time? The show?
Yeah, World Championship Wrestling, yeah.
Yes, and that, so this is it was on Saturdays, and it was pre being called WCW Saturday Night.
That's right.
So, I know that he came out, Paul Heyman came out, or Paulie Dangerously at the time, he came out and essentially just introduced the guys as members of the Dangerous Alliance, and the way I remember it, on that show when he introduced them, I don't think he had Steve Austin or Bobby Eaton at first. I think it was just Larry Zbysko, Arn Anderson, and Rick Rude was at first?
You mean in the order of that he introduced them?
Yes, I think it was
maybe Austin, Eaton, and then the Enforcers. Because he brought in Austin, and then Eaton came out, and then the Enforcers came out, and then he turned it over to Arn Anderson, who made the switch to teaming with Bobby Eaton, saying he's going to team with Bobby Eaton.
Yes,
because they were gonna like screw Steamboat and Rhodes like they screwed them by throwing another guy in there.
And that was and I love how that worked out because it made sense. It made
much
sense
better team.
Of course, of course. And I'm a fan of Larry Zbyszko.
Yeah, and I mean, Bobby, he's got to be like maybe the best tag team wrestler I've ever seen.
He's one of the best wrestlers.
Yeah.
To me, Bobby Eaton could have been, you know, utilized much more, even to the level of like a United States champion. I don't think he had the capability of being a world champion because he couldn't talk. But he always needed
somebody with him, like a coordinator.
But if he had
somebody.
A manager, I mean, it could possibly work because in the ring he definitely had it. He was great. He was great. I was even in like 2000, I think it was when they let him go. He was still good enough in 2000 that it was ridiculous that they let him go because he made other people look good just by him being in the ring.
He was there for 15 years at least. I mean, he started there like 85. So the reason they kept him so long, unless his contract rolled over and they forgot, which could have happened, who knows.
So Paulie Dangerously had returned. I mean, he'd left for a while. Like we talked about last week, there was some bullshit where they said that he was leaking information to Eddie Gilbert about Lex Luger dropping the title to Jerry Lawler.
Or unifying the title with Jerry Lawler.
Yeah, so there, you know, which was a possible scenario, and he swears he didn't do it. So this was him coming back, and he came back with Rick Rude, and so he had Ravishing Rick Rude, who had just come in from WWF. He had Arn Anderson.
Actually, Rude had been out of the national scene for like a year because you remember the previous year he had left over like I guess it was over money or something, but they did the thing where he was suspended for life because he was making fun of the Big Boss Man's mom. Do you remember that storyline?
Yeah. No, I clearly remember that, but what I thought the reason why he left was he wanted to go off steroids so he could have some kids. I
know what you're talking about. That kind of came out, I guess, during all that steroid trial and stuff years later. But I think he left because maybe he was injured.
Yeah, so they kept advertising.
He was still being promoted. He was still being promoted for all the shows he was injured at, but he wasn't getting paid for them.
Yeah, and to me that makes sense because that name helped draw that card, so he should get a percentage of that. I actually agree with that.
Yeah, so
when he came to WCW, I thought he looked better than ever. I mean, he looked just as good as he did. He was in great shape. Yeah. He had the shorter hair, which he had short hair towards the end of his WWF run, but it was even shorter when he got to WCW. And
I liked it better with the shorter hair because he looked like a more serious guy.
He looked like
serious.
A goober with that long, curly hair.
Yeah.
So... not only did they have all the wrestlers, they had Medusa, and her title was a director of covert
operations.
Yeah, director of covert operations. And
she was like the female 007 or something. I think that's what he called her.
Yes, and so just, I mean, they started off hot because they had the U.S. champion, they had the TV champion. And Steve Austin was very early in his career. Everybody knows him as Stone Cold. But when he first got to WCW, I mean, he was over as a heel immediately. And once he was in the Dangerous Alliance, it actually blew it up tenfold. I mean, it was way bigger because he looked more main event that way because it was only main event guys in there. And plus, he was
still young enough to where he got to work with all these guys that had been there for years, been like veterans for years. So that had to rub off on him, being able to work with those guys.
And one thing that really helped the Dangerous Alliance, well, there's a few things. All right, WCW in this era was going through a lot of changes. And a lot of people were coming in and certain people were leaving. Well, a lot of the talent they had was great. They had Barry Windham. They had Dustin Rhodes. They had Ricky Steamboat. They had
Pillman. They had Liger coming in.
Yes, and another great thing in 92 that was going on was a man by the name of Kip Fry who was in charge. And mm-hmm. Kip Fry had this bonus system in WCW where, hey, if you went out and you had the best match, you were going to get more money for doing that. So everybody
was like UFC, best buy for UFC, like on the UFC pay-per-views or something like that.
Yes, so all these guys were working harder because they knew they would make more money.
Kip Fry was one of like the few bosses I never heard anything bad about. Everybody really liked him.
Yes, it just worked. It just worked. So I don't know. It was just a good time to be a wrestling fan and a good time, you know, to, you know, get
that part of the
country.
It brought back like the horsemen were so big back then, so it brought back memories of that, of bringing all these guys together, all these great workers together, to form this big super group.
I mean, when the weakest link on your team is Larry Zbysko, you have a really good team. So, but he could talk, though.
Yeah.
He could talk.
And he could be the one to get beat, and it wouldn't hurt him at all.
Exactly. And Arn Anderson's a great tag team wrestler, and he's a great singles wrestler, so you can use him any way. Rick Rude, one of the best heels ever. So he was kind of the leader, I always thought. He was like the head guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, Bobby Eaton was the glue of the tag team with Arn Anderson. And he was essentially the high flyer of the group. Because he had the Alabama Jam, and, you know, he would do more than the other guys when it came to, you know, an aerial attack.
Yeah.
So they kind of had it from, you know, every side. So it just really worked. And Medusa was a women's wrestler, too. So she wasn't afraid to, you know, get involved with things. And not just get involved where, you know, some valets, they would do stuff and it looked like shit. But she would do things that actually looked pretty good because she knew how to work.
Yeah, she'd come out there and, like, whip out a karate kick or something like that.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So, once we get to 92, like Couture had said, Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton, Beautiful Bobby, they beat Dustin Rhodes and Ricky Steamboat for the tag titles right at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, it was right before that first clash of the year, I think, in Jacksonville, Florida. They beat him in a 2 out of 3 fall match. So
and it just worked.
Yeah.
So they did the whole switcheroo, but like it was fair, and the way they explained it, like I've heard so many times that what makes a good heel is that they have to believe what they're saying. So they really think that what they're doing is right, so they don't think that they're a heel. So they thought what they were doing was fair, and I actually thought so too. So it ended up working. And so at that clash, they had Barry Windham returning to team with Dustin Rhodes and Ron Simmons to go against Arn Anderson with his new partner, Bobby Eaton, and his old partner, Larry Zbysko.
Yep.
And it was a six-man tag.
And this was what was great about this at this point, because they had so many different shows, and they were having, like, all these really hot, like, tag team or six-man tag or eight-man tags, like, every week with all these guys, like, the Dangerous, like, any combination of the guys from Dangerous Alliance, it's like Sting, Steamboat, like, Windham and Dustin Rhodes and guys like that. It's really great wrestling.
Well, the good thing about this clash was the Alliance, they formed two teams that night.
Yeah.
It was one team was that team we had just talked about, Anderson, Zbysko, and Eaton. And that match actually led to Barry Windham. He got a little bit of payback on Larry Zbysko. No, it was on Larry Zbysko. I think it was on Beautiful Bobby. But either way, he had his cast, and he used the cast to beat Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby Eaton came off the top, and he nailed him with the cast. With the right hand or something, and then it beat.
Yes, and then there was another team of Rick Rude and Steve Austin, and they wrestled Ricky Steamboat and Sting. And it was great because Steve Austin was so early in his career, and Rick Rude was a veteran at the time. I mean, he was I mean, actually, at this time, he's kind of in the twilight of his career because he only lasts a couple more years after this of being an active wrestler. So it's kind of cool of Rick Rude being with Steve Austin, you know, as a team. And I kind of thought it was cool because, you know, Steve Austin could have learned a lot from Rick Rude.
Yeah, they made a really good team, like the times they teamed up. I know they teamed up later on in the NWA Tag Team Tournament, and I thought they were a really good team.
Yes, yes. So, I like that a lot. So,
this was when Paulie did the thing where he said, like, one of your heroes is going to fall tonight, and ended up being Steamboat, he got whipped with the belt or something by Rude at the end of the show. Sort that feud up.
So that set that up.
And
one thing that was kind of cool about that was just their way of getting Ricky Steamboat away from Dustin Rhodes. Because as great as Dustin Rhodes is and as great as that tag team was, Ricky Steamboat is too much of an asset to WCW to be in a tag team, especially at the time.
Yeah.
So.
And plus, Barry Windham was back, so.
Yes, yes. And they belonged as a team because they were a great team, Windham and Dustin Rhodes. So another good thing about the Dangerous Alliance and why I liked it was they didn't have to be dominant because they traded belts. I mean, Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton, they actually didn't hold titles for all that long.
I think they lost them. Let's say they won them like right around the end of January. I think they lost them. I think right before Wrestle War in May to the Steiners in a cage match in Chicago. I remember.
Yeah, it was definitely to the Steiners. I remember that, and I know that Steve Austin was the TV champion for a long period of time, and he eventually lost to Barry Windham, but he got it back.
He got it back rather quickly. I think maybe just a matter of a few weeks.
Yeah, so that was pretty interesting how that worked.
Yeah.
Because they didn't do that very often.
No.
Then, eventually they would do that fairly often, especially with a television title, where they would have, you know, quick changes as WCW went on. But Ricky Steamboat was getting screwed by Paulie Dangerously all the time. So he decided...
Yeah.
To bring in a ninja. And I swear to God, that's what it was. I mean, it was just, because he's a dragon. And so he brought in this guy to protect him. And it literally looked like almost like a foot soldier from the Ninja Turtles. I remember thinking that as a child.
It's like a name, just like what you would think a random ninja would look like.
Exactly. That's, I mean, he wore a mask.
This was not Storm Shadow or anybody like that. So.
Yes, so it was just a guy that was to protect.
That never did anything but stand at attention and have his hands together, okay, waiting for somebody to do something. Never even got in any action.
Never.
Until they end there.
So the build-up to that, or not even the build-up, the blow-off kind of, was there's a match between Ricky Steamboat and Rick Rude.
At Super Bowl
II. It was, yes. In February, and Ricky Steamboat is winning. You know, he's about to win. And then
you remember Missy Howe was trying to get a word with Ricky Steamboat, and she walked in there, and Steamboat was doing some kind of ceremonial deal with fire or something, and the ninja chased her out, and then Medusa comes up and says she wants to see Ricky Steamboat, and the ninja's there, and she slaps the ninja, and the ninja takes off chasing her down the hallway, and So
that's their out of how
better happens from that, you know, and the ninja just comes out, ends up coming out with Steamboat for the match. Because Paulie Dangerously is barred from ringside.
Yes, because Paulie Dangerously is barred from ringside. And the ninja's there to make sure that Paulie Dangerously doesn't come out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was the build-up to that. I was going to actually explain it afterwards. But, so Ricky Steamboat's about to win the match. And the ninja all of a sudden grabs the phone. And Paulie Dangerously always had his big cell phone with him and bashed Ricky Steamboat in the back of the head. So, therefore, Rick Rude got the win. So, I really didn't see that coming at all. when I was a kid.
Yeah, it was one of those things that you kind of felt stupid that you didn't see it when it ended up happening. So that's just seen that.
Yeah, it was just so good. It was so good, and it was edgy. It was edgy because Ricky Steamboat is a happily married man at the time. And Paulie Dangerously would go out on television and say that, like, you know, there are women that are saying that they, you know, slept with Ricky Steamboat.
And he's stalking Medusa.
Yes, and then he's stalking Medusa. And I loved that. I loved it because, you know, WWF wasn't doing anything like that at the time. There was nothing.
You remember they had the Saturday night where I think it was Paulie Dangerously like the special guest or something like that. Then all these women started in the crowd started standing up and saying, "Hey, I was with Ricky Steamboat last night." And then the other woman stood up and said, "No, I was with Ricky Steamboat last night. I was with him last week."
Yes, and then of course it's revealed that, you know, Paul
and then Diamond Dallas Page is trying out his new Down with DDP segment, so he puts a hidden camera on Paulie paying all these women off, and he airs it on TV. Do you remember that?
Yes, it was just so great. Oh, it was so great. And, you know, they just had, I think the only bad thing about the Dangerous Alliance was that it really didn't last all that long.
Yeah.
And there was the main thing that they really did was the Russell War. I mean, that was their big thing that they did as a
unit. War game.
And to me, that's one of the best war games. You know,
I think that's the best.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be. It has to. I'm trying to think in my head of, you know, what.
The year before was very good. When Pillman almost got killed by Sid, when he dropped him on his head.
The one that could have been so much better than it was there was the one, the War Games, and this is kind of off subject, where Kurt Hennig turned on the Horsemen.
Yeah.
That one could have been so much better if the NWO would have had better members.
Yeah, you had Conan, you had Bagwell.
Yeah, no one gives a shit about any of that.
I didn't mind like Nash and Sean Waltman. They were fine in the role that they were in.
Yeah. So this is
another
game,
term you can think of in a mile away.
Of course, WCW was really good about that. And
you should be able to see stuff coming. I mean, it makes more sense if you know it's coming.
Then
it just out of the blue, you know.
So we had the Alliance, and they're dominating. I mean, they really are. They're winning lots of matches, and if you look at their records, I mean, most of them. I mean, if you look at the win loss, they're probably at about 80% of, you know, mainly winning matches. And they would go after Sting, and they would go after Ricky Steamboat, and they would go after Dustin Rhodes, and they would go after all these guys. So, Russell War's coming up. And the Dangerous Alliance team was Bobby Eaton, Rick Rude, Arn Anderson, and Larry Zbyszko still in then?
Yeah, he was in there. This was still in the build-up to him leaving.
Yes, this was. He was getting ready to go. He was getting ready to leave.
They were doing the typical. You know, you lost the match, and it's time to yell at you. You know, do that for a month or so.
Because he had already started announcing at that point. While he was in the
He had started announcing at that point.
He hadn't yet? No, I'm nearly positive that he had at that point started it, announcing a little bit. Because that's what he started doing full-time right after he was done with them.
Yeah. Might have, so, yeah, you might be right.
So I'm pretty sure, you know, leading to that, that's where that kind of came from, because I'm pretty sure he was going to go in and announcing, because he was, you know, he had been wrestling for a really long period of time by then, and you know, his body was beat up.
Were you
still
in Chicago when you were watching this?
I'm sorry?
Were you still living in Chicago at this? Were you in Chicago at this
like,
point?
Yeah, like in that area, yes.
Oh, did you? So you got the WCW Pro Show on WGN?
Yes, I did.
That's where Zbyszko was the announcer. Remember him
yes.
and Tony?
Yes, it was. So
because that was just like the special announced team for the Chicago show. Because on the other ones they had like Lance Russell on the like on the really real syndicated WCW Pro Show. So
oh, wow.
I
did not know that.
Yeah, because you know WGN, they went everywhere. It was like TBS. So I got to watch all that stuff. And I remember they had Larry Zbyszko and Tony Schiavone on there every week. Hello. Sinbad has dropped off the face of the earth. I don't know where he is. Hold on, he's back. All right. You there? You there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
He dropped off.
Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can still hear you. You dropped off for about a minute there. And I didn't know
I
was still talking.
All right, so... You know, Larry Zbyszko, like, and I never knew that was a Chicago exclusive. I did not know that.
Yeah,
so,
that was the WGN where they had the, I used to watch WGN all the time. They had the Bozo the Clown show and all that shit.
Yes, yes. with a 10-year waiting list.
Yeah, I remember watching the CM Punk on the grand prize game.
Yes, that's so great. Well, the thing about Larry Zbyszko leaving, and he was, you know, he was going to be out of the Dangerous Alliance, was, like I said, I remember him announcing before then, and he wasn't really too much of a heel as announcing. Like, I mean, he kind of was, but he wasn't, like, really siding with anyone. He was just announcing. He was just kind of a heel announcer that, you know, wasn't really
doing
stuff.
The Larry Z Legends little deal.
I don't remember that at all.
It might have been... I think that was maybe around the beginning, like maybe 1991 he was doing that. He had his little interview segment called the Larry Z's Legends.
Yeah, really. If you do you know any more about that, like I would actually love to hear, but I don't remember that at all, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it was just like kind of like a Piper Pit segment or something, pretty much. So.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I remember
yeah.
one segment I remember, Dusty Rhodes had one.
The Bull Drop
In. Yes, yes, and Jason Hervey was always on there. it's so weird to think of how in WCW Jason Hervey met Eric Bischoff, and how successful those two are now as like a unit of owning things and having you know different television shows and.
I blame Missy Hyatt.
Yeah, it's like. he did. Date Missy Hyatt for a long period of time.
Yeah.
But it's crazy how that happened. You know, he was a wrestling fan that was on the Wonder Years. And
I mean, he was on the shows back in, like, the NWA in 1988. Like, at the first Clash.
Oh, I know he was, because he was one of the guests on that first Clash. The,
yeah.
Judges.
Yeah.
So.
It was him and who was the guy from Leave It to Beaver? Eddie Haskell, Ken Osmond, he was on there too. Remember that?
So random. That's just. I mean, that's even more random than him. Because at least he was on, like, a successful television show at the time.
Yeah,
so,
TBS had just started the new Leave It to Beaver, and they brought Eddie Haskell back, so promoting him on there.
All right. The War Games.
Yeah.
Their opponents. For the War Games were Sting, who, you know, they had been feuding with for a while, Ricky Steamboat.
It was just coming off his injury. Remember, Vader had injured
yes.
him, I think broke his ribs. And Nikita came back to like, take his place in some spots against Vader. So.
And that was great, because Nikita had been gone a while because his wife had passed away. I believe it was his wife, right? That's why he left the first time.
I'm trying to remember. I don't know if his wife passed away. That was when his wife passed away, or
I think maybe his wife passed away maybe a few couple of years earlier, because he was gone for a stretch then, and maybe he was he had just gone because of a contract deal at this point. But I know he did have a wife pass away from cancer at some point. I don't remember if it was exactly this time or not.
Yes, so he was feuding with
Lex
Luger. Well, no, he was feuding with Lex Luger, and then there was the big babyface match between Lex Luger and Sting versus the Steiners.
Yeah.
And Nikita Koloff was going after Luger, and he missed, and he hit Sting. So that set up a feud, like a blood feud between them two. So they had a long feud. And then when he came back, he helped Sting. So he was.
Yeah, you remember at that post-show press conference after
yeah.
he won the title from Luger, and the Dangerous Alliance invaded, and he and Rick Rude got into a fight, and then Nikita should have started giving everybody the Russian sickle.
And it's so great because I remember when they showed that, it was either on Pro or, you know, World Championship Wrestling, where they're like, you know, and look who's there, and they kind of, like, showed Nikita Koloff. And I didn't know who that was at the time because I had started watching WCW, like, right around the time he had already left, like, you know, maybe a couple months later, so... They eventually refreshed my, you know, like not refreshed my memory. I guess they just showed me and explained what had happened. And there was so much. I remember those commercials for that WCW would show, like advertising just WCW or their, you know, their tapes or their videotapes and stuff. And I remember one time it showed, you know, Ron Simmons after he had beat, you know, Butch Reed and stuff like that. And I knew nothing about Doom. I knew nothing about that. So it's cool that I eventually got a hold of those tapes and I got to put those puzzle pieces together so it all made sense to me. Because I still had all those memories. So Nikita Koloff was the last member of that team, you know, with Sting, Steamboat, Rhodes, Wyndham, and then, you know, Nikita Koloff was that last member. And boy, was this match brutal. And I don't mean that like as in like bad. I mean like as in like it was crazy.
Beat the piss at each other.
It was, I mean, they must have had some sort of meeting or something before the show, and, you know, they just said, hey, let's just leave it all out there, because...
Let's bring out the blade and bring out everything.
It was, there was so much blood in this match, and it was so great because, you know, you didn't really see a lot of blood then.
Yeah.
You really didn't.
They kind of dialed back on it because of the Turner thing, because, you know, they were trying to fit into the Turner family, you know, kind of a little bit more family entertainment.
And, you know, the way it was built up for the finish was Larry Zbysko was kind of already, like, I remember there was some sort of dissension there. Like, I watched that show maybe a year ago or something. I remember seeing, like, there's some sort of dissension already with Larry Zbysko.
Mm-hmm.
And he had taken a turnbuckle, wasn't it? It was a turnbuckle.
He took the bolt. He took the turnbuckle apart to where it was just the big hook that held the turnbuckle on.
And
it looked
he
like
he was
about to murder somebody.
And he went after, I think it was either Sting or Ricky Steamboat. I think it was Sting. And he went to go hit Sting with it. Instead, he missed, and he hit Bobby Eaton, beautiful Bobby, right in the shoulder.
Yeah.
With it, and it looked like it killed him. It was great. So the finish of it, the finish of the match was, you know, Sting had never used an arm bar as a finisher before, but it made sense because he had an injured shoulder, and the War Games had already officially begun, so it had to end in a submission. So Sting put beautiful Bobby in an arm bar, and... You know, so therefore, the babyface team won the match.
Yeah.
So right after that, you know, the Dangerous Alliance, you know, kicked out Larry Zbysko. He was done. And right around this time, you know, Bill Watts came in and replaced Kip Fry.
Mm-hmm.
So. You know, they kind of wanted the Turner organization. They didn't really like what Kip Fry was doing, even though morale was good. he wanted, or, you know, they wanted him to make that bottom line a little bit lower, you know, with money. So they brought in Bill Watts. And we've discussed before that, you know, we liked the Bill Watts era. We liked, you know, he implemented some changes that were good. But we also got to take into consideration there were some changes that weren't so good.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest travesties of the whole thing were the Dangerous Alliance kind of, you know, fell to the wayside little by little during the Watts era because of things that were happening. You know,
basically, Dangerously had a guaranteed deal, guaranteed contract at the time. And so Watts came in and he was giving the guys, he said, we'll give you great pushes, but we're going to renegotiate your contracts. And some guys didn't want to go for it, so they're still getting their guaranteed money, but they're not being pushed anymore. Like Brian Pillman, he wasn't pushed very much for a while there.
Yep, he said he was the highest paid.
Dangerously got phased down. Yeah.
Yeah, he said he'd be the highest paid jobber, and, you know, he didn't want to renegotiate the contract, and why should he?
Yeah,
so,
I mean, it's not his fault some dipshit gave him a guaranteed deal for who knows how many hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. You can't punish him for that.
And Arn Anderson eventually had to take some sort of a contract cut, I remember, too.
I think going on like a nightly deal or something.
Which is crazy. Why would he not want Arn Anderson under contract? But, you know.
I know.
So, you know, Bill Watts came in, cut some contracts down, and a lot of people did agree to it. You know, they agreed to it because they didn't want to, you know, ruin things with a new boss because they thought by kissing his ass, they'd get better spots on the card. So, therefore, they think that they would earn more money, but, you know, it didn't work that way.
Yeah, he got paid on how much money he saved the company. So that's why he was doing a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, and another thing that kind of stunk for the Dangerous Alliance, especially their tag team, was Gordian Williams came in. And those are Bill Watts' boys. So they were the top heels that were going after the tag titles and that they were going to be dominant. So it kind of hurt Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton, and Arn Anderson and Larry Zbyszko, whichever team that was going to be, because those were going to be the guys. And those two wrestlers were kind of a different kind of tag team than Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton were, because they were kind of power players. So they didn't really cheat to win. They were just dominant and big. So it wouldn't make sense for Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton to wrestle them, because it wouldn't have had a dynamic that would work unless Gordian Williams would babyface, and that wasn't going to happen.
But they did do the little run with them, like in the fall.
I know, but what I'm saying is, it didn't work though.
Yeah,
it didn't really work. So
they were doing the thing where Gordian Williams was going to Japan. They wanted the Steiners out when they got back. So they talked to Paulie Dangerously and told him to, you know, put Zick, Garn, and Bobby on them. I think they did a little deal there. But after they had beat the Steiners, then they wanted the title shot. Remember they put Michael Hayes with them?
Yes. And Michael Hayes, like, I always considered as a kid, like, him kind of an unofficial member of the Dangerous Alliance in a way, because he kind of helped them a little bit. And the way they had it set up where Paulie Dangerously kind of wasn't there anymore, and they were saying that team of Arn Anderson and Bobby Eaton and Michael Hayes was all the dream teams put together.
It was all the combination of the greatest tag teams of the 80s, like the Horsemen, the Midnight Express, and the Freebirds.
Mm-hmm. So Michael Hayes is with them, you know, doing their own thing, and then Rick Rude, who didn't really see eye to eye with Bill Watts, eventually had another match with Ricky Steamboat, and they had an Iron Man match. I think that was in the Beach Blast, right?
Yeah.
And he just beat him. He beat Rick Rude in the Iron Man match. And I always thought that that kind of was a blow, because also on that show there was Natural Dustin Rhodes and Barry Windham and Nikita Koloff. They beat Arn Anderson, Bobby Eaton, and Steve Austin on a bullshit, you know.
It was just to get it was a disqualification. It was to get the new top rope rule over. You know, you couldn't come off the top rope. And also, because it was Ole Anderson, he was disqualifying Arn Anderson, who was supposed to be his relative. So,
yes,
that's why he did that.
And I didn't like that they used that match on a pay-per-view to get that
mm-hmm.
thing over. Because they could have done it on World Championship Wrestling to do the same thing. But it was on a pay-per-view, or they could have even done it on a Clash, which was free. But they chose not to. And
Top Rope Rule was so stupid.
It was
stupid. I never
understood
it. Especially
when
you got, like, on a regular basis, you got, like, the Great Muta and Liger coming in pretty regularly.
Yes. I mean, he killed the Cruiserweight division.
Thank God that NWA tag team tournament with NWA rules, they use the top rope.
Yes, yes, that was great. And that was a great tournament, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're kind of sticking together, but not really, because a lot of things are starting to fall apart at the time. So, you know, Bill Watts is causing a lot of, you know, issues. Like, I remember Terry Gordy left around this time because Bill Watts, you know, he made them a deal because they were his boys, but then didn't pay him. You know, didn't
mm-hmm.
pay him what he said, so he just left
because
Gordy didn't need WCW because he had
Japan.
He had Japan, so he didn't need it. And so Austin filled in for him and was teaming with Steve Williams, which is kind of funny because his real name is Steve Williams.
Yeah, so, just Steve Williams teaming together.
Yes. And then, which that didn't make any sense because, you know, Steve Williams isn't with the Dangerous Alliance, so they were kind of all starting to scatter a little bit.
Still had a great match, though.
Yes. Yes. And then, in the fall, well, I know Rick Rude had some matches with Masaccio.
Yeah, he was in the finals of the NWA title tournament.
And there was one match I remember. Oof. It was a stinker. They had one match.
They
were that
Halloween Havoc. Halloween Havoc.
Yeah, they had a match in Japan that was really good.
Yeah.
And then they had one at Halloween Havoc that they just did not gel together at all. It didn't make any sense because, well, Rick Rude was hurt, wasn't he?
I know he ended up, it was not long after that he ended up having, like, the neck injury that kept him out for a few months.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he left. I know he left in the fall, either September, or no, either October or November. He left.
Remember, he was supposed to be in the main event of Starrcade with Ron Simmons.
Yes, he was.
And so they had to take him out, and they put in Dr. Death against Ron Simmons, and he was out for, like, I think he was out for, like, 3 months and came back and feuded with Dustin for the U.S. title.
Yes, because there's that old story. I don't know if it's true or not, but I remember reading about Rick Rude, you know, was being an asshole in the dressing room, and said that, you know, Eric Watts, you know, because Eric Watts was supposedly this great wrestler, like actual, you know, collegiate wrestler. He's a football player. And Rick Rude said, hey, you can't turn me over. And Eric Watts supposedly, like, immediately turned him over. So, you know, they got some sort of, you know, altercation, and, you know, Bill Watts got rid of him. I mean, temporarily, but he got rid of him, though. So, you know, the U.S. title didn't have a home anymore. Rick Rude never lost the U.S. title.
Yeah.
So where did that belt end up?
Remember they were
when he was out, they were doing the tournament for the number one contendership. It came down to WCW Saturday Night. It came down to Dustin Rhodes and Ricky Steamboat in the finals.
Yep, yep. I remember that distinctly.
And because Rick Rude couldn't return to face the winner of the tournament, then they made the winner of the tournament would become the new champion. So that's how Dustin became the champion.
And I remember in that match, didn't Barry Windham attack Ricky Steamboat?
Yeah, he was on the count out. He won because he gave him that implant DDT on the concrete.
Which was amazing.
Yeah, and he gave him that. And so Dustin won it on count out. And then they came back and had a rematch the next week, which I think went to a time limit draw or either went off the air before the with the finish.
See, one thing that I always loved about Ricky Steamboat was what balls that guy had. Like, Ricky Steamboat is one of those wrestlers that never compromised his integrity for any wrestling company or other wrestler. I mean, if there's things that were good for a storyline, I mean, he got DDT'd on the concrete by Jake Roberts in the WWF, and then also by, you know, Barry Windham on this Saturday Night, this
mm-hmm.
match. So I've always thought, like, you know, very highly of Rick Steamboat, you know, just being such a great thing for wrestling. And plus, he was great, too. He was a great wrestler.
He was a professional.
I don't know, I've just always been a fan of him.
Just a real professional out there, like in every aspect, pretty much. You never heard anything bad about him. I think the only time you heard anything bad about him was about his wife.
Yes, exactly.
Controlling his career, that the only bad thing you heard about him?
I remember one time I downloaded one of those, the RF Video shoot interviews with, like, the crew of RF Video. I remember seeing that, and it was, and they were talking
actually
about
have
Rick Steamboat.
Yeah,
they were talking
about that
Rick Steamboat shoot interview where they, like, made it perfectly clear that, you know, Bonnie Steamboat was the boss. And, you know, she made all the rules with all that and had all these requirements and stuff. And I'm so glad he got rid of her.
Yeah, and then the story was that, you know, when they finally split, he said, well, she's not in the picture anymore, so, you know, let's make the deal.
That's so great. That's so great.
I remember that little stretch where she was, like, in court to take the Dragon name from him or the Ricky Steamboat name?
Yes, she was trying to. She was trying to. And a lot of people thought that it was going to happen. Luckily, it did not.
Yeah.
So Rude left, and eventually Paulie Dangerously had a feud with Medusa. And Medusa was turning babyface. So, you know, how did all that come about?
They were doing it. It was just kind of like, for a while there, it was just Medusa with Rick Rude. And, you know, they had the Halloween Havoc coming up with Rude and Chono in the NWA title rematch. And then Bill Watts came out one week and said, well, your manager, Paulie Dangerously, has signed an open contract for you a while back for this pay-per-view coming up. If you're still the U.S. champion to defend the title, and you're going to defend against Nikita Koloff. And so he's all of a sudden he's got two matches on one night. He's mad at Dangerously, and it's more that and then every time Dangerously's around, then Medusa will say, you need to come talk to me and Rick Rude, and then he'll kind of blow it off. And anyway, they have the match, and they have the thing where a judge somewhere has filed an injunction or something, or put a hold on the match, the U.S. title match, and said it's not gonna, it can't happen, or but they can have a surrogate to defend the title for Rick Rude, which ended up being Big Van Vader beating Nikita Koloff in the U.S. title match.
I loved the whole surrogate thing.
I just love the court. I said, what is this? How much could this judge be schooled on professional wrestling to make these rules and stuff like that? He doesn't know shit. Anyway, I just always love the one where we don't have the footage right now. It's locked in a safe in the judge's office to be reviewed for later. I said, okay.
So great. I mean, WCW would do stuff like that all the time, but, I mean, I remember as a kid, you know, I didn't know any better. I really thought there were the courts, you know, like, oh, shit, you know, this is serious. The courts are involved.
I love the one where you're on the Nitro, like, right after Halloween Havoc, and say, like, Halloween Havoc footage is on the way. It's not here yet. So why the fuck ain't it here yet? You got this multi-million-dollar company. You got all these trucks outside. Don't I put the tape in the fucking trucks that you brought from the pay-per-view? That was
so great.
And then, anyway, you remember, and then, in like one of the segments, Big Van Vader's there, and, you know, Paulie Dangerous, congratulating and thanking him for, taking the match to, defend the title for Rude. And then Medusa shows up, and he just starts saying a bunch of mean shit. Starts saying, that was mama, how your mama and your daddy both wanted a boy, and they almost got one, didn't they? And then she calls off, and he says, the only reason you got this spot is because the other hooker I had for the job had a previous commitment.
She so great.
And just kicks him right in the head and jumps on him. And then they get pulled apart, and Polly grabs the microphone and says, come on, you bitch. Come on, you bitch. Damnest thing I ever heard at that time or, you know, on a wrestling show. Probably got in trouble for saying some of that stuff.
But the way that they worked together, you could tell that they got along. Because
yeah.
It was, I mean, it was just great how that, I mean, that whole, you know, Pauly Dangerously Medusa, you know, stuff was some of the best stuff of the Dangerous Alliance because it was so heated.
Yeah.
And
it felt more real than anything else.
Of course, of course. And I remember being a kid, you know, I was watching, you know, one of those segments, I don't know if it was that one, but it was something like that where, you know, he called her a hooker or something like that, and I didn't know what that meant, you know. So I remember, you know, asking, like, I don't think I'm pretty sure I asked one of my uncles, because I think I was at my cousin's house, what a hooker was, and I ended up getting in trouble for it, and, you know, there was a whole issue where, you know, before the Attitude Era, no one thought wrestling was, you know, anything but just a goofy kid show.
Yeah.
But, you know, I definitely got grounded from wrestling that time because of that. So.
And I think they did the gimmick where they were going to fight at the Clash, and so probably we were going to have like a exhibition match against like Mike Thor or somebody like that, and so. Paulie would go back, he'd rear back, and he'd punch him in the face, and the guy wouldn't sell it. And then Paulie would just, like, turn around, and all of a sudden hit the guy from behind. And they'd say, look what you did. He knocked him down.
Yeah, because Austin made, like, the best coach. Like, he'd be out there. And that kind of showed a little bit of the Stone Cold character then of Austin having a lot of personality. Because you didn't really get to see that before then. So
they had the little thing where afterwards they were doing a promo and all the Dangerous Alliance guys were out there and then Medusa was out there and probably just shaming her and saying all this nasty stuff to her and all of a sudden you see all the guys, they're getting these looks on their faces and that's too much. And then all of a sudden they walk off and he says, what are you going to do about it? He said, let's get her, guys, and there's like nobody behind him. And
yep.
And he turns around and then she chases him like up the steps into the audience or something like that.
So, you know, that was pretty much the last legs of the Dangerous Alliance. Like, you know, kind of, you know, wrap it up for us. Like, what really happened? Like, you know, why did it end? And it kind of ended abruptly.
I think it was just that whole Bill Watts thing. Bill Watts didn't want to. He wasn't going to feature Paulie because he wasn't going to, you know, like, renegotiate his contract or get bought out or something like that, so he just wasn't going to feature him much, so he just kind of buried him. And then I got the story pulled up right here real quick. Then he was fired on officially fired on January the 15th by WCW by a letter faxed to him from Bill Watts, so no, it was not just Eric Bischoff that faxed people's firings to them. Or FedEx them, or whatever.
Yes.
It said, Watson letter claimed that WCW's investigation of Dangerous Lee's expense reports turned up falsified reports at the Ramada Hotel Atlanta Airport South for dates in April, May, June, and July
of 92. And Watts' letter also claimed that the Ramada Hotel confirmed agency wasn't registered as a guest on the dates, claiming the expense report, and appears that you induced Ramada Hotel to provide false information that you did stay at the hotel to support fraudulent expense reports and attempt to obtain improper payments of approximately $1,200. So I guess basically like he was embezzling money or something. I don't know.
Yes, yes. And how much was the total?
$1,200 or something like that.
$1,200.
The receipts he turned in were for 39 dates. It was for like $1,162.50.
So, you know, how that worked out, you know, it ended up working out for the best, I guess, for all those ECW fans out there.
Yeah.
So, you know, he left and went to ECW, and I know there was a kind of a dangerous alliance in ECW, but, you know, it wasn't the same thing, and he kind of got rid of that once, you know, he got
he moved
more
over
control.
Into a full-time promoter.
Yeah, he moved on over and took over the company. So, you know, it's just, it was good. It was good for wrestling. The Dangerous Alliance,
yeah.
You know, was so hot for a period of time, and, you know, it was good for wrestling. And there was just a lot of things that ended up working against it, so it couldn't last longer. You know,
yeah.
There's the Bill Watts thing. You know, there were injuries. There were, you know, there was just a bunch of different issues. You know, Larry Zbyszko wanting to, you know, not wrestle anymore. There was just a lot of things working against it. But one thing I can say is that every guy that was in the Dangerous Alliance was, at worst, good. I mean, Larry
yeah.
Zbyszko, you know, let's go ahead and do that. So afterwards, you know, Larry Zbyszko, he was an announcer, and he was a heel announcer. But there was time where Steven Regal was a television champion, and Steve Regal said that, you know, Larry Zbyszko couldn't hang with Steve Regal. So he beat him in a non-title match. And then
beat
know,
him
Regal
in a title match.
And, yeah, then Regal said he couldn't do it again, and he beat him in a title match. And then eventually, you know, Regal got the title back, and you know, Larry.
For some reason, Larry Zbyszko did.
Yeah, yeah. So then Larry was, you know, he was kind of a babyface announcer. He kind of, you know, blurred the line between the two. And
yeah,
then,
until he got to the until the NWO thing took off, and you know, then pretty much came to just more of a babyface announcer.
Yes, and then he had a match with Eric Bischoff for control of Nitro or something, and he beat Bischoff. And that
probably one of the biggest matches in the history of that company, I'd say.
No, it was. It was built up very
one of the biggest shows. Yeah.
Yeah,
the biggest show of all time.
And say what you want about Bischoff. I know Bischoff eventually beat Flair, but the whole build up for that match and then Bischoff losing and the whole blow off of all of it, Bischoff did a great job for
yeah.
being a non wrestler. I thought he was awesome.
Yeah.
So, you know, he beat Bischoff and then had a match with Scott Hall, and that was another one of those turns you saw coming from a million miles away with Hall saying that, you know, Dust, I know you brought me into wrestling and stuff like that, and then Dusty saying, hey, I'll be with Larry Zbyszko in his corner. Like, why else would he be in his corner? It made no sense, with the exception that he was an announcer, and then Dusty turned on Larry and Larry lost that match, and that was pretty much the end of it.
Wanted to know what was on those, what was in that envelope that Baby Doll had, those pictures. He still wanted to know the answer to that one, when she was managing Larry Zbyszko in 88.
That's, I mean, stuff like that is just so great.
Yeah.
Well, then.
And Steve Austin, I mean, Steve Austin after the Dangerous Alliance, they were pretty hot there with the Hollywood Blondes for a few months. Well, they got killed off for no reason.
They got killed off partially. Well, I don't even want to say partially. It was mainly due to Flair.
Yeah.
You know, the way I look at it, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Ric Flair, but I hate when he plays the victim. Like in his book, he plays the victim so much, but, I mean, let's be real here. I mean, he wasn't, you know, a nice guy to a lot of people for so many years. And then when Hogan came in and kind of, you know, took his spot of, you know, being top dog.
Turned the tables on him.
Yeah, and then, you know, it was kind of one of those, you know, he could dish it, but he couldn't take it. So that was always my thing with Flair. So Flair and Arn Anderson had a big, you know, Flair had come back, finally, and teamed with Arn Anderson, who was now a babyface with Ric Flair,
mm-hmm.
to go against, you know, Steve Austin and Brian Pillman in a match at the Clash of the Champions. You know, for the tag titles, you know, straight up for the tag titles, right away with Flair gets there. And that show actually, you know, did pretty poor in the ratings. And, of course,
and
it was
Austin
Flair
Austin
that
and Pillman got blamed for it.
Yeah, could, you know, and Austin and Pillman were hot at the time. So
yeah, they were the hottest two young guys in the business at their point.
Yes, so, of course, they immediately dropped the tag titles, and then they have a feud against each other. You know, and Austin went with Colonel Robert Parker.
That's right. He beat Dustin Rhodes at Halloween Havoc, it was at Starrcade 93, and 2 out of 3 falls for the U.S. title.
Yes, because they had a match at Halloween Havoc, but Dustin Rhodes won that first match.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then, of course, you know, he wins the U.S. title, hurts his knee, gets, you know, FedExed, is released, and then goes on to
lose the Hacksaw Duggan in, like, 50 seconds.
Yeah, and then goes on to become, you know, one of, if not the biggest star in the history of professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Well, Rick Rude, you know, he comes back, feuds with Dustin Rhodes over that, you know, U.S. title. And
he's with Flair over that big old belt, the NWA title.
And the thing about Rude came back and was unsuccessful against Dustin Rhodes.
Yeah.
So Dustin Rhodes, you know, kept his belt. You know, he feuded with Rude and
yeah, they did the deal where it was they had some kind of match and it was like a double pin, so the belt was held up. So
yeah,
like for a couple of months there, they had the Iron Man match that Beast Blast, but it went to a draw. And they had, like, a best-of-3 series on WCW Saturday Night that they won, that Dustin won.
Yes. So then Rude went on to the... At first, it was the NWA Championship. But then...
And it was the big gold belt.
Yeah, then WCW and the NWA broke apart. So they literally, for a while, they called it the International Heavyweight Championship or something like that. And then eventually
it was the WCW International World Heavyweight Title or something.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. But I think, no, did Rude ever beat him?
Rude beat Flair for the title, yeah.
Yes, and then eventually...
He lost it to Sting.
He lost to Sting.
And he beat Sting in Japan. And I think this was a Japan match where he already, like, got a broken back or something.
Yes, yes.
And I think that's probably what put him out. And then he just left after that. And, you know, they had the match with Vader and Sting at that Slamboree for the vacant title. And he had one of those Lloyd London policies that all those guys had back then where they could just sit out and be water money.
Wasn't there talks of him going babyface to go against Vader?
He was, because remember, Harley Race had cost him the title against Sting at that one spring stampede when he hit him in the head with a chair on accident.
Yeah.
They were supposed to have that match at Slamboree, Rude and Vader. But that's when, you know, he got hurt and left.
Yeah, so that was kind of the end of it for him. And, yeah, like, the thing I got confused about with that big gold belt was, I was like, you know, Barry Windham, you know, came in there somewhere. But then I remember Masachono had lost to Muda, who lost to Barry Windham, who lost to Flair, who lost to Rick Rude, you know,
yeah.
Who lost to Sting, and then they unified it with Ric Flair.
That's right.
So yeah, that was that. So that was Rick Rude. And then Bobby Eaton, like, as a, you know, featured performer, kind of ended after that.
Yeah, it did. He was, I remember in the next year. Remember, he had a good little tag team, but they never did anything with the, with him and Chris Benoit. That's kind of a mid-card tag team.
I mean, we do have to mention he was with the Blue Bloods, him and Regal, for a while.
That's right.
So, but yeah, they had a team. He had a little team with Benoit, and that was kind of keeping him relevant. And then he had the team with Regal in, what was it, like 95, 96, right?
Yeah, they were just like 90. I think for a couple of years, like 95 through 96 or something like that.
Yeah, and then eventually he just became, you know,
they had the
talent.
Yeah, and they had the infamous little, they did this little comedy bit where at the Bash at the Beach in 95 when they were in L.A., the Blue Bloods were sightseeing, and they were outside O.J.'s house. And Bobby reaches in the bushes and picks up a knife and looks at it, and just nobody's looking at him, so he just throws the knife back in the bushes. So great.
That was it was little stuff like that that was just so good. That was so good. And
I love the Blue Bloods were great whenever Dusty Rhodes was commentating. You got Bobby Eaton there, the Earl of Bob, and you got Chives there with the Butler Chives.
And another thing that we should probably mention is during all this stuff with Paulie Dangerously and all that stuff, Medusa got the attention of the WWF. And
yeah.
She went to there and became the first WWF,
The next generation kind of version.
Yeah, the next generation.
Yeah.
You know, she was the face of the women's division in the WWF.
They started the women's division up again, so she became the first champion.
And all that was, I mean, she was either the champion or wrestling for the title the whole time that version existed.
I think all the people she feuded with were she feuded with Luna Vachon, Bull Nakano, and Bertha Faye. That was it.
I know there was more. I know that she beat... The finals were her and, was it Heidi Lee Morgan, I think it was?
Yeah, Heidi Lee Morgan on Raw.
On Raw, so she beat her. And then, I know at WrestleMania 10, she wrestled Leilani Kai.
Yeah.
So, and that was kind of paying homage to Leilani Kai being at, I think it was the first WrestleMania 2.
Yeah.
So, you know, they had that match. And she was well past her prime. She looked like shit. And then, you know, she had the thing with Bull Nakano, and Bull Nakano beat her for the title, and then she won it back. And then right as she won it back, that's when Bertha Faye showed up, Rhonda Singh. And Rhonda Singh was always big, but at that point her weight was really out of control. So they gave her the gimmick of Bertha Faye, who was, you know, Harvey Whipple then, who was this, you know, nerdy wrestler, and, you know, he was her main squeeze, or she was his main squeeze, and it was just a stupid gimmick where, you know, she's fat as shit, and she skips around, but she's a killer, though, so she beat Alundra Blaze right away, and then, you know, she won it back. And then they were starting to bring in, like, some Japanese
Aja Kong.
Aja Kong was at the Survivor Series 95, and she, you know, hit her with a spinning back fist and pinned her. So
yeah, because I remember they, in January, I even saw, like, the graphic they had. One week it was her and Aja Kong for the women's title at the, like, the Royal Rumble or something.
Yeah, so that was the plan, you know. But they had told her... At least this is according to her. They had told her that, you know, that they were going to let up on the women's division. They didn't want to do it anymore, which kind of sounds like it's bullshit because they were advertising that match already.
Yeah.
So she was a free agent. I think what it was that they weren't going to give her another contract. They just wanted her to work, you know, date by date.
Like per night or something. Yeah.
Which, you know, in her defense, that was their mistake. I mean, if I had an opportunity to make more money, you know, make X amount of dollars to do one thing and then get a fat contract for it, I'm going to take that contract. Because with WWF, she didn't know where she was going. And obviously, she was about to lose the title. So, she showed up on one of the first editions of Nitro.
Yep.
And dropped the WWF women's title in the garbage can, which, you know, was...
That's probably one of the more memorable things people remember about Nitro.
Oh, yeah, it was pretty crazy that happened. So
yep.
That kind of, you know, burned her bridge with, you know, the WWE overall, you know, because after WCW went out of business, and she, while she was at WCW, she had a run too. You know, she had the women's title and had a feud, you know, with, you know, Bull Nakano again. And eventually she went and got herself some big fake tits. And, you know, she was with the Macho Man for a while.
They got real big into the monster trucks. Might still be, as a matter of fact. No.
And I'm pretty sure that she's kind of made amends with the WWE. Because I remember
website. They did something like, maybe she was at like a WrestleMania the last year or two. And I know she got a big like royalty check because she had mentioned something about it. And maybe she had done some kind of like interview for like one of the DVDs or something like that. I know they did like one of those Where Are They Now things on the website that they always do.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, they do those like Where Are They Now things. So they did one of those things on her, and I thought it was cool.
You can't ever burn your bridge with Vince unless you're like, your name's Nails and you accuse him of grabbing your balls or something.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, because he'll always do what's good for business. I mean, not always, but most of the time.
Yeah.
So, and then the last person that we have to talk about, I mean, obviously Arn went on to do, you know, Ric Flair came back, they did the Horseman again, they had the whole My Spot thing, he retired, he became an agent, and he's still an agent.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's...
He's somebody I think that needs to be on TV. He needs to be like managing Ryback or something.
Yeah, something like that would work out very well.
Because so, I mean, I love listening to him good talk. He's just awesome. Probably my favorite interview of all time.
And the last person was the mind that was, you know, behind the Dangerous Alliance, Paulie Dangerously, Paul Heyman, who, you know, he got fired, so he went to ECW and was working there and was just kind of gonna wait. Originally his plan was to wait it out because the Crockett's were going to get back into wrestling. So
yeah.
He was going to, you know, head that company, and he was just kind of waiting. And he was.
I think it was the World Wrestling Network. Is that what that was?
Yes.
The one in New York. Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to use ECW as kind of like a farm system for that. Like, that was his plan. Like, you know, he would use that as part of the, you know, he told them he would use that as part of that, you know, big Crockett company. Well, that didn't end up working out. They did a couple of what were supposed to be tapings, but a lot of them they didn't end up taping, and their big star was going to be Road Warrior Hawk, and, you know, it was just, you know, it just didn't work.
Yeah.
So eventually he moved himself into the company of being, you know, the head guy. His best bud, Eddie Gilbert, ended up leaving, and they had a falling out, and so he was the person in charge. And he started making some changes, and he started, you know, making it his company. And
yeah.
They did the whole thing of, you know, there was the NWA tournament, and Shane Douglas threw the belt down, and, you know, they became Extreme Championship Wrestling and broke away from the NWA, and it blew up, you know. He had a successful company for, you know, a few years, and, you know, he
had
a ton of money.
Yeah, just look at the influence it had on the business in later years. I don't know. But the business would have gone where it was if BCW hadn't existed, you know?
Of course. So, it changed wrestling. And so, you know, eventually they went under. He signed with the WWF, you know, was an announcer for a few years. They restarted ECW, you know, and then he left. And he started doing his own thing. He had the Heyman Hustle, a little, you know, video, you know, type show in an article, and he stayed close with Brock Lesnar, who he managed in the WWE for a while.
Yeah, he always pop up every now and then, like at the USC or something like that. And he and Brock were always a good friend. And I think he helped write his book with him.
He still had a relationship with Brock Lesnar. You know, they were friends, you know, kind of a, like, I don't know if he has, like, some sort of, like a real-life, you know, manager thing with Brock Lesnar. Like, there's something like that.
Like Lesnar had with the Road Warriors or something like that?
Yeah, I really think there's something like that where, you know, he helps him, you know, with business.
Maybe just an advisor or something.
So then when Lesnar came back, Paul Heyman came back.
Yeah, I figured it wouldn't have been very long ago. So Paul Heyman showed up in some form. This made sense.
Yeah, so the thing that was kind of cool was, you know, Lesnar eventually went away, you know, for a while. He's not going to come back till WrestleMania or the Rumble. I don't know when he's coming back. Well, then Paul Heyman was one of the people that was a real big fan of CM Punk and brought, you know, kept saying, hey, call this guy up, bring this guy up, he's great. Well, CM Punk did the promo last summer and said that he was a Paul Heyman guy.
Yeah.
Well, eventually, you know, he had the world title. He's had it for over a year. He turns heel, and they gave him a manager, and they gave him Paul Heyman. And it's been great. I think it's been pretty great of, you know, them aligned. It's good to see him on TV. Paul Heyman belongs on TV. He's too good to not be on TV. So, you know, that's where everybody is now. And, you know, anybody that is a big fan of the Dangerous Alliance, you know, go out of your way to watch the stuff. There's a guy on iOffer I saw the other day that had all that footage. It's like 12 or 13 discs of everything that the Dangerous Alliance did while they were together. And it's like $30. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if you like the stuff that we were talking about, really go out of your way to check it out.
Yes.
Because it's some good stuff. It's some good stuff. So, you know, that's pretty much all, you know, all we could talk about on that subject.
Yep.
So, you know, next time we record a show, I don't know if it'll be next week because I don't know how, you know, the scheduling is going to work out and all that stuff.
Christmas is what, Tuesday next week?
So. Yeah, Christmas is Tuesday. So, I mean, it's possible. I'll talk with Trier. But I don't know if it'll be the next show, but I want one of our shows upcoming to talk about. We've never talked about a subject in the WWF before.
Okay.
We've never done that. And I kind of wanted to get in depth of the, you know, Montreal screw job thing.
Okay.
You know, there's, like, a long time ago, I was taking a school course where I wrote, like, a really, really long thing about, you know, the whole Montreal thing. And, you know, I took, you know, I you know, emailed a bunch of people and asked a ton of questions and all that stuff. And I found some of that stuff. So I thought it'd be cool to kind of, you know, maybe go through that old Observer and, you know, the Torch from around that time and then the stuff that I have. And, you know, we could really, you know, go into what led into it and how it all panned out and all that stuff. And, like, I think we could do a pretty decent show about that. And, you know,
can we talk a little bit about that movie?
Yes, yes. We could definitely
Which
talk
is
actually, about
that. I mean, if anybody out there has Netflix, it's up on Netflix for instant streaming, so.
Yeah, actually, I'll probably watch that, you know, this week, just to refresh my memory on it. So, you know, that movie is called Wrestling with Shadows. The guy that made it, his name is Paul Jay. So check that out. It's on Netflix. It's great. So watch that, and either next week or the week after, we'll be back, and we'll be talking about that or something else. I don't know. Karen and I, we will talk it over, and that's pretty much it. That's all we got. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to Trier for being great, as you always are, with remembering stuff that I always forget.
Merry Christmas.
And, yeah, Merry Christmas, everybody. So Merry Christmas to you, too, Trier.
All right.
Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will see you guys soon.